You're listening to another episode of the Pelican Pages segments here at Dixie Broadcasting, and we appreciate all of you who are with us tonight. We have a very special guest with us on this particular Pelican Pages segment. In fact, the gentleman that I have with us on the broadcast tonight is a gentleman that I have heard referred to throughout the Southern Movement at various meetings I've attended myself over the last 10 years as the man that started the modern Southern Movement. And in just a moment, we'll talk about the book that kind of got all of that underway, and I think you'll find out that maybe those accolades aren't too far off the mark. We are very honored tonight on Dixie Broadcasting to have Mr. Michael Grissom with us, and he is the author of Southern by the Grace of God, as well as a number of other works, and we'll talk about at least one of those others tonight on the broadcast. But Southern by the Grace of God is really the thing that got it all started a number of years ago. So, Michael, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you, Ray. It's nice to be here.
Well, Michael, let's get started, if you would, by just telling us a little bit about yourself. How did you personally become interested in Southern things?
Oh, it goes so far back, it's hard to nail one particular event down. Well, being from Southern Oklahoma, which was populated mainly by people from the Old South, Deep South states, was a good starter. But I was in high school, and the first part of my college career during what they call the Civil War Centennial. And there was a heightened interest in all kinds of things Confederate at that time. So I think that probably added to my already Southern background and Southern leanings. It was a great time to, it lasted 4 years.
Right.
Some of the Southern states wanted to call it the War Between the States Centennial. But Congress had every state develop a Civil War Centennial Commission, and finally the Southern states decided to go ahead and call theirs a Civil War Centennial Commission. But I think that probably piqued my interest more than anything else.
And of course, back then, there was not the anti-Southern bias, by and large, like there is today. Is that correct?
Oh, that's right. There was no Southern bias back then. In fact, several of my friends and who are as old as I am and still living, remember when the old movies we used to watch from the 40s and the 50s and the early 60s, the Southerner, the Confederate soldier, the Confederate cause was always presented in the favorable light, and about 90% of the time the Yankees really got the short end of the stick, but it, of course, it's completely reversed now, and that's sad.
Well, the Southerners just made for better heroes in movies or books or real life, either one, didn't they?
Oh, you bet.
Now, Michael, what motivated you to write this book, Southern by the Grace of God? Because this one book really came out before any of the other modern Southern movement books hit the bookshelves. And this book, I think, more than any other work out there, really was kind of the impetus that rekindled that fire and that interest in the Southern, the whole Southern heritage movement itself.
Well, I guess you're right. Dr. Calhoun, the publisher of Pelican Publishing Company, likes to say it was the book that opened the door to all the other books. And that's the reason I wrote it. There was a void. There was just a vacuum of resistance to all of these terrible, terrible things that were happening to us. I wrote the book in 87. And got it into print in 88. Well, between the Civil War Centennial Commission, which ended in 1965, that was 22 years there, that really nothing took place. There was a status quo up until, I would suppose, 1970, probably 5 years there. And then between 1970 and when I wrote the book in 87, it was just one kick after another, one knock after another, one demand after another. Take this flag down, change the name of this street, the name of the school. It's offensive. So I was in music. That was my vocation. And I would travel and sing. And I noticed that nobody was stepping forward to combat this movement, this anti-Southern movement, and I expected some well-known author to step forward and write a book in our defense. And when nobody did, I said, "Well, I'm going to do it." And I guess I was foolish enough to think that I actually could do that. I'd never written anything, and that's really where the book came from.
Now, how did you actually get started with writing it, and how did you decide what content you wanted to include in this book?
Well, I suppose a lot of your listeners probably have the book, and if they do, they will notice there are 100 pages in the center of the book of old photos, old black and white photos of Southerners. And when I started, I thought that was my intention, was to put together nothing but a book of photographs, and I sort of figured that the pride in seeing those photographs would, you know, jumpstart this Southern pride that really was still burning in the hearts of most Southerners, and they would just kind of infer something from the photographs. But as I began, and I had collected old photos for many, many years, and when I started putting the photographs together, I saw the necessity for explaining this or explaining that, telling about this photograph. And all of a sudden, I found myself writing, writing. And the book turned out not to be a photographic book, but a kind of a crash course in Southern culture. And I think that's why it took off like it did in 88. People had reached the point to where they needed a crash course. Nobody was instructing them in their schools. They weren't getting any of the old Southern traditions that we grew up on, so the book took on a large form, and the photographic section kind of shrunk.
You just couldn't keep that fire that was burning in your bones inside, could you?
No, I couldn't.
Well, I think that's a good thing, and I think this is a good point for us to go ahead and mention the fact that undoubtedly, many of the folks who have been around in the Southern movement for a number of years do have a copy of Southern by the Grace of God, but we have many, many multiplied thousands of folks who are new to the Southern movement over the last 10 years. And so for those of you who may be listening to this broadcast and do not have a copy of Michael's book, there's absolutely no way you ought to be a member of the Southern movement today and not have a copy of this book that got it all started. Southern by the Grace of God is one of the books from Pelican Publishing, and while we're talking on the broadcast even right now, you're probably seated at your computer or nearby. You can pull up the Pelican website by going to epelican.com, and at the top there's a tab that says Browse Our Selections. If you click on that, you can type in Michael Grissom, and it'll pull up the books by Michael that Pelican has, or you can type in the title, Southern by the Grace of God, and it'll pull it up that way. If you actually purchase the book from Pelican online there, you can actually get it at a sale price while we're on the broadcast tonight. But take the time to take a look at that if you don't already have a copy of it. By the way, I assume, Michael, this would also make a great Christmas present with the holidays right down the road.
Oh, yes, a great Christmas present, a birthday, anything that's coming up. Oh, yes. Buy the book.
And folks, if you have people that are in your family or friends that love Southern things, or that you'd like to awaken their Southern personality, their Southern identity within them, this is a book that'll do that for them. We're talking with Michael Grissom here on this Pelican Pages segment about his book that started it all, Southern by the Grace of God. And we're going to talk as we go through the broadcast tonight about some of the actual chapters that are in the book. It's a tremendous book, over 500 pages. And as Michael said, about 100 pages of that are old photos of Confederates and things Southern from years gone by that just add to the content, the written content of the book. But Michael, if we could, what I'd like to do is let's take just a short break here, let you catch your breath and get something to drink maybe, and when we come back, let's dig into this book and go just briefly chapter by chapter. And folks, this is a book that one of the reviewers has called it an unashamed love story of the South. from the author. And, Michael, I think that's a pretty good description of what you got there.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, well, folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Get you something to drink and get right back over here. We'll be back with Michael in just a moment.
They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern Movement, from the Kennedy Brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages segment. We have Mr. Michael Grissom on the phone with us here at Dixie Broadcasting tonight, and he's all the way out in Oklahoma, and we're all the way over here in Georgia, so we've just spanned the Confederacy tonight, Michael.
Well, good. We'll hold it down at both ends.
That sounds good. now, let's actually get into some of the actual contents of the book, Southern by the Grace of God. I'm going to go chapter by chapter, and Michael, you feel free to go as far off the trail as you want to go with in any one of these chapters, but I'm going to try to for my sake, I'm going to keep them in order here so that I'll know where we're going, okay?
Now, Ray, I'm going to tell you something. I think it was William Faulkner that said he never goes back and reads anything he wrote, so we won't go far off the trail. I think I'm kind of like Faulkner on that. It's been a long time.
Well, it has been a while since that one's been published, so...
Yeah, about 19 years.
and you don't remember everything you wrote? I just don't understand that.
Well, when you get as old as I am, you'll understand.
Okay, chapter number one, Michael, is simply entitled Southern. Tell us what was on your mind. Obviously, this was kind of your introduction for the whole mm-hmm. book itself. What's important about being Southern, Michael?
Well, I think that was by way of introduction to all the rest of the material that was to follow. I think I felt like I had to kind of identify a lot of the elements that characterize the Southerner and set him apart from, say, Northerners or Westerners. And I believe I went into the climate, which has a lot of effect on the way people operate.
Mm-hmm.
And some say we're lazier because it's hotter down here. But our speech sometimes is affected by climate and other things, where our ancestors were from in England and Scotland. And I thought it was important to let it, like I said, it's a crash course on Southern culture and on Southernness. So I had to sort of identify the Southerner and mark his characteristics. And I believe that's mainly what I was attempting to do in that chapter.
And you know, one of the things that I thought as I was as I was going back through that first chapter today, Michael, in preparation for tonight, is the, a quote that I've heard Professor Donald Livingston from Emory University here in Georgia say a number of times, and he's a well-known speaker in Southern heritage circles, but he always likes to say that the Southern people, just like any other people, have a right to preserve our valuable way of life. And that one particular quote just kept coming to mind as I read through your book today, because you basically are laying out the fact that, yes, we are a unique people, and we do have something that's valuable and worth preserving, whether Yankees think so or not.
Well, yes, I agree with him wholeheartedly, and we have that right. I don't know how much longer we're going to have it if we don't assert it.
Right.
I think people only have the rights that they're willing to fight for, and unfortunately, we have not claimed our spot in the culture spectrum, and we should insist on that right, because we are losing all these characteristics by virtue of not aggressively holding on to them, like every other ethnic, racial, or cultural group does. We seem to step back and say, oh, go ahead, you know, you
right.
celebrate yours, but I don't know much about mine, so I
right.
won't celebrate mine.
Yeah,
and we've got to
right.
stop that, and if we don't, then we're going to be lost in the dustbin of history.
I knew we were going to get some of that fire coming back up out of you. Okay, now, one of the things that makes us a unique people is this Southern accent that we have. Some of us have it more than others, and I'm sorry to say I don't have it as much as I'd like to have it. But chapter 2 in the book is entitled Southern Accent. Why is our accent important to us as Southerners, Michael?
Well, after my introduction, I think I sort of went into detail on several of the characteristics in that second chapter. Did deal specifically with the Southern accent. Well, it's important because it is one of the characteristics that so well marked us in earlier years and set us apart as a special people. You didn't have to ask a person, say 40, 50 years ago, where they were from if a Southerner opened his mouth. Unfortunately, the Southern accent is all but gone. The old people who spoke it, who learned it from their mothers and fathers, have passed away, and TV and the media, the movies, have all pretty much erased that. If you listen to these, especially these little girls, boys aren't as bad, but they're bad enough. But these little girls who are graduating from high school in Jackson, Mississippi, or Atlanta, or Dallas, or
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma City, or Norfolk, you will not find a Southern accent. You would have to search far and wide. They speak like their I hate to use the word heroes, but their musical
right.
personalities and their movie stars. They don't pride themselves in it, and they're not going to speak it. They haven't learned it.
And you know, that certainly is something that defines any group of people that has any heritage that's going to survive, is the fact that they do take pride in those differences.
Sure.
And you know, not only does it seem like the media through Hollywood and radio and everything else is portraying the Southern accent in a negative way, but even as young people go to school and they go to English class or speech class, they're actually taught to leave that out, because it sounds like all of the educational institutions want everybody to sound like a Midwesterner with no accent at all.
Sure, and all this emphasis on phonics and this program that they've sold millions of copies of on the radio. You used to hear the advertisement, Hooked on Phonics.
Right.
And even their pronunciation of that was Hooked on Phonics.
So,
you know, it right there tells the tale. And people would order these things, teach their children not to speak Southern. I don't suppose they were so much saying don't speak Southern. They were just not thinking how important a dialect is to
right.
a culture and to a people. So they allowed their children to speak like Hucked on Phonics taught them. And so, consequently, who is going to pass on that Southern accent? These young people now are totally incapable of it. So it's dying because of the generation gap.
Mm. Now, chapter 3, then, Michael, has to do with symbols. That's the title of the chapter, Symbols. Why are our symbols important? And Michael, why do you think that our symbols themselves are under attack? I understand why our principles are under attack. They've been for a long time. But only really, as you said in our introduction tonight, really only since the 1970s or so, have our symbols themselves come under attack. Why do you think that is, and why are they important to
well,
us?
Well, it's another way to destroy the culture. It's a way to destroy our... And when you destroy the culture, and you destroy the feeling and the attachment that people have to their culture, then you've pretty well remade the man. And I believe that the country as a whole wants... I believe the government does not want sections dialect's peculiarities in the United States. Their goal seems to be to stir us all into one mass, and we must all think the same way. And if you can get rid of regional symbols, and the South, of course, had many more regional symbols than anyone,
right,
any other section, well, then you have further eroded a resistance to this big brother government. I think that's one of the reasons. And, of course, you know, they have used the race factor to shame weaker Southerners into just voluntarily putting their flags away and let's mm-hmm. don't sing Dixie.
Right.
It's all a political game, and very few of our people now fight against it. It's just groups like Dixie Broadcasting and the Confederate Heritage groups that still stand up. But I'm afraid the majority of Southerners don't see the importance of these symbols. I mm-hmm. put them in the book to familiarize people with them, because they're not going to go to school
right.
and find these symbols.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you've hit on something there, Michael, that really no one else is saying, at least not outside Southern Heritage circles. And to be honest with you, there ain't a whole lot of it being said in Southern Heritage circles nowadays, that this this cultural war, as you stated so succinctly, is really has a political goal in mind. Because if we're all that Yankee cookie cutter image, we're a lot easier to control, is really
you
what
bet.
It boils down to.
You bet. We're very malleable when we have no roots. We've been our cities are totally deracinated now. You just don't feel. I read someone once said, and I quoted it in a book, someone said they could walk through Atlanta for a week and never hear a Southern accent.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's probably true. I try to stay out of Atlanta as much as possible, and I don't live that far from it. Now, chapter number 4 of the book, Michael, is it's simply entitled The War. And obviously you're giving us a little bit of a synopsis about the real version of history as opposed to what's in all the modern textbooks. And is there anything, I know we don't have time to go into all the details of the war, but is there anything specifically you'd like to point out tonight about the war itself?
Well, I really like the introduction to that chapter, and I'm just going to read that right quickly. It says, Granny, in a delightful episode of TV's Beverly Hillbillies, was trying to educate somebody, probably Jethro, about the war between the states. In only one sentence, she explained the war. It was when the North invaded America. And I liked that very much, and I used it to introduce that chapter. But, we have to write our own truth. As you said, it's not out there. It's not readily available. And so I wrote a chapter on the war so that our poor, brainwashed children out of the government schools might actually find a bit of truth before they die.
Well, you know, if we don't begin to do that with our young people, whatever efforts we're putting into preserving Southern heritage is all for naught anyway, isn't it?
I believe it is. A generation has to pass something on, or it's a new ball game each generation.
That's right, and we are dangerously close to that precipice, I'm afraid.
I agree.
All right, chapter number 5 is on Reconstruction. Now, I know that this particular chapter, as you sat down to write the book, you've already helped me to understand this was an important chapter to you because you wanted our Southern folks to understand the significance of Reconstruction. Why is it important in your estimation?
Well, it was a terrible time, unlike anything I hope we ever experience in this country again, and it was unlike anything that had ever happened. After we had been bludgeoned and defeated and lay prostrate, Congress and the government simply treated us as an occupied country and sent troops in and stationed them in the streets and threw elected officials out, disbarred most white people from voting, and then used the black masses to work with the carpetbaggers, the scallywags, to completely overthrow the generations that had gone before. Every Southern state had to rewrite its constitution, for instance, with no Southern white representation whatsoever.
Mm.
Counties were renamed. Still got counties in Louisiana named for Lincoln. It was such a terrible, terrible time, and yet there's so little out there about it. And even when I wrote this 19 years ago, about the only book-length account of it was Claude Bauer's, I believe it's The Tragic Era, and that is such hard reading. And I read through the whole thing, but there was really just bits and pieces, and I tried to collect those from personal accounts and archives, and we just needed to know that. We really needed to know about Reconstruction. You talk about persecution, that we survived the war, and we survived Reconstruction, but it was much harder to survive it than the war.
Folks, you're listening to another Pelican Pages segment here on Dixie Broadcasting, and we're joined in the studio via the telephone line tonight with Mr. Michael Grissom. And Michael is the author of Southern by the Grace of God and a number of other works, but Southern by the Grace of God is what we're talking about tonight, and it really is the book that got the entire modern Southern movement underway back in the 1980s. And so it's a book that you owe it to yourself to have a copy and to read it and pass this information on to your children and your grandchildren. While we're on the broadcast tonight, I would encourage you to take the time to go to the Pelican Publishing website, look at this book for yourself. If you get our email updates that go out regularly, you probably received one of those today, and it has a link on that email that'll take you straight to Michael's book, or either you can go to the Pelican website at epelican.com and click on the Browse Our Selections tab at the top and type in Michael Grissom or type in Southern by the Grace of God, and it'll pull that book up for you, and you can see it there and find out a little bit more about the book online there. And then you can even order it at a reduced price if you order that at least during this broadcast. So take the time, look at the book. If you don't have a copy, you need to have a copy, and if the family is needing a family Christmas present this year coming up or any other occasion, this would be something to put on the list. We're going to take a break now for just a couple of minutes and let Michael catch his breath and get him something to drink, and we'll be back in just a minute. Listen to this message now from Pelican Publishing, and then a song that's one of my favorites, Michael, which is the Rebel Airs singing For the Cause. And folks, we'll be back in just a moment.
They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, epelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At epelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit epelican.com. That website again, epelican.com.
All right, welcome back to this Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. And we have with us tonight Mr. Michael Grissom, who is the author of Southern by the Grace of God. And it's really the book that got the whole modern Southern movement started. And we're going chapter by chapter. We're getting close to the end of the book here. We're just giving a little bit of an introduction about what this magnificent book includes. It's over 500 pages, and it really is intended to stir within Southerners that desire to know about their Southern history, their Southern heritage, and Southern culture, and to put it back into life again. And the book is from, Michael, did you say 1988 is when it was first published?
It was first published in 88. I published it myself twice. I think I published it twice in 88, and then Pelican heard about it and became the publisher.
Okay. And we'll talk about Pelican's part in this in just a few minutes. Now, Chapter 6 is entitled A Portrait of Dixie. And that's the segment of the book that you included, that 100 or so pages of old photographs of the Old South and Confederates from days gone by.
Yes, that as I said, that's what the book started with. It started out as a photographic book, and they're very interesting. Anybody that likes old pictures will love these photographs.
Now, Chapter 7 is entitled Confederate Heroes, and there are two particular ones I want to mention. I know one of the heroes that you tell about in the book is Forrest, and of course Nathan Bedford Forrest has to be the quintessential Southern hero. Any Southern boy that can't picture himself riding right there beside Nathan Bedford Forrest, or maybe being Nathan Bedford Forrest, riding on his gallant steed with his hat on and his Confederate cavalry behind him. I don't know of a Southern boy that hasn't done that or wouldn't like to do that at some point or another. But you tell the story, and it's one that I learned growing up over the years, that took place here in Georgia, and it's where Forrest was up in Rome, Georgia, just south of Chattanooga, and the Yankee commander that was about to capture the city of Rome, Georgia, was surrounded by Forrest, and Forrest had about a fourth as many men as the Yankee commander did, but because Forrest had his men keep moving the artillery around to different places on the hilltops around where the Yankees were located, the Yankees thought they must have four or five times as many as they had, and he actually surrendered his sword to Forrest. And when he found out that he didn't have as many men as Forrest had, he demanded his sword back, and of course Forrest wouldn't give it back. So
he was already captured.
That's right. That's right. But a great story. And then I think you have picked out a quote about President Davis to read to us and comment on.
Well, you know, just several things to say about Southern heroes. If you mentioned any boy would love to have ridden with Forrest, and if our Southern boys came up with heroes like this presented to them, just think what a different South it would be.
Wow.
There aren't very many heroes anymore. People, we don't have heroes. We have personalities, and most of them are profane singers and movie stars.
Right.
But President Davis is another example of a leader unlike anything we have today. We don't have morally upright, righteous leaders like President Davis, and very intelligent leaders, very thoughtful leaders. So I included his short biography in here, and even in the North, they knew what kind of quality he was. And I'm going to read a quote from the New York Herald. After Jefferson Davis passed away in 1889, the New York Herald wrote, "In the essential element of statesmanship, Davis will be judged as the rival and parallel of Lincoln. When the two men came face to face as leaders of two mighty forces, bitter was Northern sorrow that Providence had given the South so ripe and rare a leader, and the North an uncouth advocate from the woods." Everyone nails Lincoln, doesn't it?
And of course, that's coming from that bastion of pro-Southern culture, the New York Herald.
Yes, heart of New York City.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was obvious. It was evident that the character of the Southern statesman was so much better than your average ragtag Northern politician. Sorry to say.
Now, Chapter 8 is entitled Southern Lore. What do you mean by Southern lore, Michael?
Well, Southerners, as I pointed out in the beginning of that chapter, I remember doing this. Southerners love to talk, as is evidenced by this show tonight, as you can see. Southerners love to tell tales. You know, families have all sorts of tales. Anytime you get two or three Southerners together, you're going to have somebody telling a story, and lots of times it's a funny story that you can slap your leg and laugh over. But I had heard several stories. One was about the Bell Witch of Tennessee, and that concerned Andrew Jackson, and stories that kind of made the rounds throughout the South. And I condensed some of these and put it in, and just told some good old, put it into this chapter. just told some good old Southern tales that are really purely entertaining, not so significant for a political view or anything, but they're an example of the culture of tale telling.
Sure.
In the South.
Well, you know, growing up, some of the things I remember the most are the stories that my grandpa used to tell. And I'll guarantee you, Michael, probably at least half of them weren't the least bit true. but they are some of the most memorable things from my childhood.
Well, sure. And you cherish those things. That's part of you. That's part of your makeup.
Now, Chapter 9, you ended the book with a chapter on researching your ancestors. Why'd you put that in there, and why is that so important, Michael?
Well, we need to know who we are. We need to know where we came from, and we have to know who our ancestors were. And our ancestors were such worthy individuals. I thought it extremely important that people be able to access some of the archives, the material that's hidden in state archives in different places, and they need to be able to know where to go to research and find out who their ancestors were back past, say, great-grandpa, and find out about their service in the Confederate Army. And so I got the addresses of most of the holdings of genealogical material across the South, and put this in here. Now, you will notice that I gave post office or street mailing addresses. This was 1988. These people all now, these archives all have websites now, so it's even much easier.
Wow.
And there's no excuse now for anyone not finding something out about their Confederate ancestor, and that's very important.
Wow. Folks, this book, Southern by the Grace of God, really is a book that you need to get into the hands of anyone that you're working with to try to bring them along in their understanding of their Southern heritage or their Southernness. It's a book that even just by itself will stir these embers up within them and equip them with the information to know where to get more about that and get them moving in the right direction. So all of the work that you've been doing to try to awaken these things within them, this book is going to take that and run with it. So we're talking with Michael Grissom about his book, Southern by the Grace of God, really the book that got the entire modern Southern movement underway. And I know there's you've already mentioned, Michael, that you self-published the book the first two times, and then you came across Pelican Publishing. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the story there about how you became acquainted with Pelican and how you came to have the book published with them?
Well, Ray, I was foolish enough not to know anything about publishing or printing as I started writing. I knew I could write. When I got through, I thought, what do I do with this stuff now? And I had moved to Nashville in the middle of the book and finished it there and began to shop around and ask about printing and binding and learning the ropes. And had I known that it's almost never very successful, I probably would never have done this. But I published it and did some promotion through the mail to addresses I had gotten from Tennessee archives and different places. And it was a hit. People wanted it. They were thirsty for it. And before the year was out, I had to publish again. I was in my second printing, and a friend of mine, a lawyer in Nashville, knew Dr. Calhoun at Pelican. And he told Dr. Calhoun about the book and how well it was selling in such a short time. And I don't remember whether Dr. Calhoun wrote me or whether I wrote him, but within a week, he had requested a copy of the book. I sent it to him, and within another week, he had called me on a Wednesday night and said, "We want to publish the book."
Wow.
One of the employees told me one time that Dr. Calhoun thought that it had a shelf life of probably 10 years. He thought that would be it. He needed to get the book. It would be a long-lasting book.
Right.
Well, it's still selling after 19 years. So he was right, and we were very lucky.
Well, I guess this is one case then when you were making the decision to publish the book on your own before you knew of Pelican. I guess this is an instance where ignorance was a good thing for us, or you never would have tried to publish it. So,
well, you know, they say ignorance is bliss, and it certainly was. I was as happy as a loon doing that and not knowing what I was doing. I borrowed money to do this, and I was very fortunate I was able to pay it all back.
Well, you know, we interviewed Dr. Calhoun several months ago here at Dixie Broadcasting, and he recounted a little bit of the history of Pelican Publishing and what its original intent was when the original founder of Pelican started Pelican back in the late 1800s, because he wanted to preserve the best of Southern culture and Southern heritage for future generations. And then, of course, it went through a number of changes over the years. And then Dr. Calhoun was able to get possession of the publishing house and has begun to restore that original intent. And I know from talking to Dr. Calhoun and his daughter there at Pelican that they feel like your book really helped them to get back started doing what that burden and that desire was in their heart, to restore that original intent of Pelican Publishing, too.
Well, that's quite flattering to know.
I know that you have at least one other book with Pelican, When the South Was Southern, and I'm assuming that this must have been your decision to go ahead and do what you originally intended to do with Southern by the Grace of God. Is that right?
Pretty obvious, isn't it? Yes, I had longed for that book of nothing but photographs, and I just cannot pass up a good photograph. I used to when I was able to travel before I began to take care of my mother. I used to go to all these flea markets, antique stores, and you can find so many photographs that people have just pitched out in an estate sale or something. Mm. So I have continually picked up old photographs, and I had plenty, and I decided that I should go ahead and do that follow through with my original plan and do that photographic book. I have 525 photos, all black and white.
Wow.
Beautiful old photos in there, and a lot of these, by the time I wrote that, people had read Southern by the Grace of God and were loaning me a lot of pictures of Confederate soldiers, of Confederate reunions, so there's lots of Confederate flags in there, a lot of UDC meetings and pictures. So it was so much fun to write that book, When the South Was Southern. Very entertaining book.
Wow. Well, at some point, Michael, we're going to have to get you back on here, and let's talk about some of these philosophical and political things that we just touched the hem of tonight.
Well, you're going to get me in hot water yet, aren't you?
Okay. Well, folks, maybe we won't get him in too much trouble, but we've been talking tonight with Mr. Michael Grissom. He's the author of Southern by the Grace of God, and With the South Was Southern Both, but Southern by the Grace of God is what we've really been discussing tonight. It is the book that started the modern Southern movement, at least probably more than any other book that's out there. So, Michael, we want to first of all say thank you to you for all the work you put into that book and these other books over the years, and we want to say thank you for being on the program tonight.
Well, you're quite welcome. It was my pleasure, Ray.
Folks, if you don't have a copy of this book or you'd like to order an additional copy for someone else, you can do that by going to the Pelican website at epelican.com, type in Michael Grissom, or type in Southern by the Grace of God, and it'll pull that book up for you. You can buy it online at a reduced price if you do that while you're listening to the broadcast tonight, probably also within the next few days as well. But you can also, if you just have to have the book right now, well, tomorrow, get in your car and drive down to the closest bookstore, because more than likely it's already there. I visited two bookstores today, Michael, just to check and make sure, and both of them had copies of your book on the shelf. So,
oh, that's good news. And you know, Ray, even if they don't have it, they can order it because it's in their computer database, and all
that's
they need
great.
Is the title and the author. They've got to make sure that they don't order Southern by the Grace of God by Louis Grizzard. It's a completely different book. It came along after mine and sort of stole the title.
Oh.
So they need to make sure it's Grissom and not Grizzard.
So, folks, don't settle for any imitations or substitutes, even from Louis Grizzard. Get Southern by the Grace of God, by Michael Grissom. And folks, that's going to wrap it up for this Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. We do appreciate Pelican Publishing Company being one of our primary sponsors here at the radio station, and they are one of the reasons that you're able to listen to Dixie Broadcasting and Southern Heritage Radio 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, both on the internet and over about a dozen radio stations across the country off and on all week. So let Pelican know that you appreciate them sponsoring Dixie Broadcasting, and let them know that by taking time to look at the selection of books they have right there online. Folks, that's going to do it for tonight. Stay tuned. There's plenty more coming up tonight on Dixie Broadcasting.